the Rebel Leadership Podcast, a refreshing take on authentic leadership told through real stories. Let's smash the status quo and change how leaders lead once and for all. It starts with a moment of courage. It feels like you're about to drop a bomb on someone you care about, but it's your ultimate responsibility as a leader to give it to them. Hard feedback. It's a gift, and delivering it can be easier with a single formula. Dave Jakubowski is the CEO of Eureka and an avid investor and advisor to growth stage companies. He is a lifelong learner and storyteller and gets real with us about some actual hard conversations he's had in his past and ones he has to have soon. He shares his formula for delivering hard feedback and even triggered an aha moment of my own at the end of the episode. Listen, reflect, and embrace your next aha moment. So as I was thinking about this, I've had a lot of hard conversations over the last couple of weeks, and I thought it was only fitting to talk to you about all this today. Do you have a hard conversation that has recently happened?
I have two that instantly pop to mind. One that I need to have, and one that I recently had.
Let's start with the one you recently had.
Yeah.
The ones that you need to have are very stressful to think about.
You're not kidding about that. The good news is I kind of have a formula for it. So it takes the drama out. I still hate it. I still dread it, but it takes the drama out of it. So the conversation that I recently had is with a person who has all the potential in the world. I see it. And they're extremely capable. But the effort isn't sustained. And so we see flashes of it, but it doesn't happen repeatedly over and over and over. And there's not an ownership level of responsibility and initiative to see things all the way through that in order to take the next steps in their career, they're going to need.
So do you feel like you owe it to them to be the one to say it?
Totally. And that gets me in trouble sometimes. And that's okay.
Were other people observing it and yet you're the one to say it, or were you the only one who had the ability to see that and then say it?
No, if I'm the only one out on a ship someplace, I'll spend some time to make sure that it's not some internal bias with me. And that's really, really important with a hard conversation. It doesn't mean I won't do it. It just means that I'll spend a lot more time finding it. But it was something that I noticed. And then I brought to a couple of the other leaders in the organization to say, have you noticed this? And immediately, you know you're onto something when you're immediately like, oh my God, I totally was thinking that the other day.
And that's a fine line too with employee personnel things, because you can't talk about certain things. You also don't want it to come across as bias, like you just mentioned, or gossip. And you don't want to lead the witness. So you have
completely
to validate it in some sort of way that doesn't do any of those things. But what has been your experience with that piece of it? How do you overcome it?
So two things. When I approach somebody and I'm kind of fishing to see if they're there, I don't come out and say, hey, here's what I'm noticing. Do you notice that? I'll say, hey, how are things going with so-and-so? Or, hey, how's your work going on this project? I know you're working with A, B, and C. And the person, if the person is A, you'll get a little feedback. Or, sometimes you can just say, especially to leaders, you can say, hey, I'm doing some personal development work with my crew. Any feedback you can give me about what we should be doing better. If you have to go fish too hard for it, because I use a technique, I mentioned I have a formula. I use a technique that I call spot and example. So I spot the behavior that I'm trying to have. And then I have to look for that behavior that I want to correct. And I have to have concrete examples. And there's some science behind this. Human beings and the way that our brains work, the easiest way to think about it is think of it just as rows and columns in a spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a column to label it and say, this goes in column A, right? Then our ability to retain and internalize it goes down. So if the behavior is, I want you to see a project from start to finish and have complete ownership of it, I need to call that out, make that label A, and now say, here are the three examples where I saw that fall down. Here's the corrective behavior. And their brain now has a row and a column. They can go, oh, that's column A too, and put it in. And that structure serves me well.
Is that something you were taught, that you learned through swings and misses? Or how did you get that perspective?
A little from column A, a little from column B. I did a bunch of work on studying and understanding this kind of the sociology of behavioral organizations. And that's where I learned that the brain actually has a pattern to the way that it works. And this is important for human evolution. And so I translated that in my own brain from too much database work into it's just a row and a column. But that's information that I learned from studying organizational behavior. And I just shortcut it to it's just a row and a column. The rest of it, the spot and example, that's a whole bunch of trial and error.
Yeah.
I have experimented a lot with trying to teach people, trying to communicate with people. And I have this expression that I'll say often, which is ironic given the work that I do, that education doesn't work. And what I mean by that is that if we want somebody to internalize something, it's not enough to give them the book. You can't just give them the book and say, here, read this, and expect them to walk away. So they have to be able to see it, meaning it has to be visually right in front of there, or it has to be an experience that they have lived, or it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. And you have to say it in a way that's empathetic, but clear. And a lot of times, at least for myself, I had thought I was giving hard feedback or hard conversations, but in reality, I was just dancing around the actual point, and so it confused the person, right? So there's a science to that too, of like, how do you actually spit the words out in the way you intend without hurting the other person, but also giving them the benefit of the feedback that you're delivering?
So if I'm being totally transparent, the reason that I started the study of the organizational behavior is because I got feedback as a manager that I was kind of a jerk. Mm. And I was like, I was so taken aback. Like, I have lots of flaws, but one of them is not that I don't care about people.
Yeah,
I care so deeply about people that I'm willing to go across and say things that other people won't, because I believe so deeply that it will help them and that that's a responsibility. And I won't just passive aggressively ignore people. I won't do that. And in my brain, I'm taking this much harder stance to help people. And the feedback was that I'm a jerk. And I was too upfront with it, too direct with it, too in your face about it. And so I was like, oh, I had to reevaluate the whole thing. And I had to really study what was going on.
But how did you receive it in that moment? Like, did you really see it that way? Or were you like, F you. No, I'm not.
I mean, I went through all the stages. I went through the, I'm hurt. I went through the, I'm angry.
Yeah.
I tend to process those things really quickly. So it took me about 2 hours before I ended up where I usually end up, which is I'm going to research the hell out of this. And that's just my personality. But I went through all those stages, and whoever, and the person who delivered it, I can see their face even today, probably saw me go through all those things in about a 5 minute span right in front of them. And it's probably one of the best things that anybody's ever done for me.
Was it just that general though? I know you're saying the feedback that was you were a jerk, but was it clear enough where you could understand what they meant by it or examples of it?
They had an example with it. And when they said that, I was like, I was really earnestly just trying to help. And so I know the person well enough, and I had enough trust that the person was not trying to do it to hurt me, which is a big key. And I'm going to get there in 1 second. That I didn't really have a choice but to take it seriously. They also hit me at a good phase of my life. I had young kids, still have young kids, but I had really young kids. Mm-hmm. And early on, as you become a parent, you really, for me anyway, I really had to look at all of what mattered to me and what was important and how I see the world. And it's a fairly fundamental, cathartic phase of life that you go through when you first have kids. Oh, and that's kind of when this hit me. And I really was taking stock of everything about how I thought about the world. And so I think at the moment in time, I think it had been 10 years earlier or 5 years earlier even, I probably would have not internalized it in the same way. This goes back to the row and the column. Yeah. My brain was ready for that, for column A to have a label and then to do the work to fill it in.
The pivot point. We were just talking about this as a senior leadership team. It's like, I truly believe that you need to be ready to receive hard feedback about yourself.
Totally. Totally.
Because chances are people have been trying to tell you all along, you just weren't listening or heard it and just decided that your opinion about yourself was more right. But same thing with me. I feel like I can replay some of those really hard, meaningful conversations where you're just like, what? And you come out and you're upset with that person and you're mad and you're upset with yourself and you're embarrassed a little bit. And there's all sorts of emotions in it. And then they're life-changing. Reflecting completely on it now, it's like the ultimate responsibility of leadership is to lean into hard conversations.
Totally.
But you were scratching on this other point in that story, which is intention.
Yeah. So I read a book in that part of that exploration journey called Radical Candor. And it's by a woman who used to work at Google, if you look back at the history of search and monetization, is one of the more influential people in the evolution of search monetization. And she tells the story about her use of the word and that she had a very well-known boss who pulled her aside one day and told her that when she uses in talking like this makes her sound dumb. That's a pretty hard message, but really right to the point. And she absorbed it. And at first she was mad and hurt and all the things. And then she absorbed it and it changed the trajectory of her career. And she went on to accomplish a whole bunch of amazing things. And then she writes this book. And she said that the single thing that when she began to go talk and began to write the book and research success and not success, the single thing that made the difference, in addition to the feedback being valid, was this concept that she calls cares deeply. And so I began to explore that into my own self, because I believe, for better or for worse, I believe that I do care deeply.
Yeah.
And if that's not coming through, well, then that's on me. And so often I've learned that what I start with is I have to ask people what I want. And I learned this lesson the hard way. So I have a funny story if you're interested.
Of course.
So I was managing a sales team as kind of, I was coming up in my early executive careers, and I was managing a sales team, and I had this woman who was a phenomenal seller. She was by far the best person that I had. And so new manager Dave thinks he's doing all the good things, and I have a leadership position open to run this group. And so I promote her into it. And I'm a good guy. I'm promoting based on merit. She's the best. She gets the job. And she just wilted. Like her productivity went down. She started to walk around the office, and I could see it in her face. And I would ask her, hey, how you doing today? How are things going? And every time I asked, I got, it's great. It's all fine. Yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And one day she was really kind of down. And so I said, hey, let's go have lunch. And so we went and we had lunch. And I said, what's going on? I can tell you're not happy. You know, you're not your usual stellar self. And she literally right in front of me broke down.
Oh.
And started crying. And I felt like the biggest asshole in the world. Sorry. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that.
You are. It's okay.
And
it's not public radio.
and she said, I hate it. And I was thinking to myself, oh man. And I said, well, why? Well, she goes on to tell me that she's this competitive horse person. And so on the weekends, she likes to do this, and it started to bleed into her weekends and her work. So it's interfering with the part of her life that she loves the most.
Oh, wow.
And I said, well, what's your ideal? She said, my ideal is I want my old job back. And if I hit my numbers, can I take Fridays off so that I can travel to my events and actually explore the towns and the places that I visit? She didn't want what I wanted at all. And I realized in that moment how selfish my act was, not how good it was. I never spent the time to say, what do you want? And so I have two sentences that I will now make sure that when I'm going to enter anything where I have to get somebody to do something or evolve their career or give hard feedback, I must start with one of two sentences. What do you want? Or how do you feel?
Do you feel like people have the answer to that first question?
No. But it gives them permission to the possibilities. And you can have a conversation. What do you want out of your career, out of this project, out of the next year, the next quarter, the next 5 years? And you get to open up the possibility that you give a shit about that for that person. Or how are you feeling? How does this make you feel? How does this situation feel? If I were to say to you this, how does that make you feel? The framing of just those, using one of those two, especially for somebody like me who's kind of very analytical, and if I force myself to do that, it just gives me a simple thing that keeps me kind of inside the fairway.
Right.
And it opens the possibility that I actually care to the mind of the other person.
Did you learn about that from other leaders that you admired? Like, how did you learn that style? It's such a thoughtful, empathetic way to engage one of those conversations.
The what do you want part of it literally came from that story.
Wow.
I went from this look at me, merit-based,
right?
You know, manager of the year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I went from that to what a selfish act that was, that I never considered what she wanted. And that really took me to my core. And I was really young. You know, I was 28, 29. And I really had to evaluate what was important. The irony of that whole story is I gave her exactly what she wanted. Her productivity went through the roof. She got to do all the things. She was the happiest person in the office. And the person that I hired in the spot that vacated is literally today one of the best managers I have ever met. She runs most of Facebook's small business organization today, as we sit right now.
Wow.
She's a badass. Both things turned out so much better because I was open to the fact that what she wanted. So I learned what she wanted there. I am not a touchy-feely person. I'm the opposite of that. I am, give me the brutal honesty. So the how do you feel? That's actually relatively new. That's in the last 10 years for me. And I'm old, so that's pretty new. It was probably 6 or 7 years ago. And I was very fortunate in that in some of my executive development, I did get to work with a business coach. And we did conflict resolution. And in one of those workshops, we reenacted a thing where two people are just never going to agree.
Yeah.
And the coach said, okay, now we're here. How are we going to resolve this? And there was a small group and most of us were like, you're probably not going to resolve it. And we've all seen that situation before. He said, okay. And he pulled one person aside. He said, okay, go back. He said, now do it. And that person said to the other person that they were having the conflict with, said, how does this make you feel? And you get like in the moment, you could see the look on the person's face and just all of the fight and the anxiety, the whole thing just melted. And it was like this, had that coach not done it that way, it would not have had the impact. But because they did it that way, you could physically see it. I didn't read it. They didn't tell us. It wasn't an instruction. You could see a physical emotion on a human being change. And that's how I learned that.
And you realize people don't get asked those basic questions.
Nope.
That is such a powerful thing to learn in leadership, that you are the person that is required to ask those questions. That is your job.
It's your job.
It's not managing the work. It's not making sure the quality is there. Yes, those are part of it, but your literal job is to ask the questions that are so obvious that no one gets asked, especially how did you feel in that situation and how can we learn from it? And the fact of the matter is, in that story you told about the person who didn't want to be in that manager position, right? You could have received that and been offended by it. Right. Our entire society is like offended by everything. They're offended by the comment about that woman sounding dumb. If she was offended by that, she would have stunted her own growth by not listening to the courage that leader had to tell them the truth. And I feel like this world we live in is so nervous to have hard conversations, and rightfully so, because of the way that it's received on the other end. Have you seen conversations land in a really horrible way that you've tried to deliver with the best of intentions?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's part of the job. It's a job hazard. All jobs have a hazard. As a manager, that is the job hazard. And to be candid, I'm not perfect at it. So sometimes I'm causing that. And I still have to be aware of that like, oh, geez, maybe I wasn't at my best. I didn't prepare correctly, or, you know, I had a crappy day at home and it translated over here. Like those things still happen. I still make those mistakes. And the only thing that you can do is own it and go backwards and try to do it. But even when it's executed flawlessly, it comes from a place of deep compassion, and that I care deeply and that I am trying to move it forward, it can still backfire. But here's what I will tell you. It tends to backfire for a short amount of time. And most of the time within the conversation, the person comes around if you get the formula right. And if they don't come around in the conversation, they'll come back to you. I can't think of one time off the top of my head when I've had all my spot and my example, my cares deeply, and that I've opened with one of those two lines, that it hasn't worked out. So I can't think of one. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I can't think of one off the top of my head, which speaks volumes to people. I also believe that, I believe with all of my heart, that most people want to do well.
Yeah, me too.
And that they'll actually do the path of least resistance to good. So just be careful what you make the path of least resistance to good. And so if you get that formula right, it doesn't always go good in that first 10 second moment, but on the overall arc, it almost always does.
So what's the hard conversation you need to have?
I am a very high achieving person who is phenomenal, critical to the success of everything that we do. But there's a pattern to what they focus on and what they don't focus on. And when stress happens, they revert back to this less important set of things, but that create lots of busy work in moments of stress. And in order to break free on the next side of this professional career, and I've already had the conversation about what they want. I did them in separate things. And I took that away with, let me figure out how to help you with that. And I just walked away. And now I have to come back and say, if you want to unlock that, these are the steps that you have to do.
Is it scheduled yet?
It is not scheduled yet.
So is that part of the due diligence before you can have it scheduled, is making sure you get your columns and rows down?
Darn right. And I have to go, I only have two concrete examples that are fresh. Yeah. And I always come in with three. Yeah. I could go do it with two. And we're in a very busy cycle right now. And I anticipate that cycle is going to end about mid next week. And so I'll likely schedule it right before the holiday, because I want to send them into the holiday on a high. And I think I can accomplish that.
What about when it comes to giving hard feedback to another senior leader that is either your peer or someone higher than you?
So I'll give you two things on that. The first is that conversation of where I learned the how do you feel. That was all peers. That was all extremely senior leaders at a very big company. And we were all peers. And the reason that we were doing it is because the culture of the company is that it's coalition building across senior leaders to get big initiatives done. And that can get political really fast.
Oh, yeah.
And so if one leader doesn't want to do it, they don't put their resources towards it, it doesn't happen. So you have to be able to figure out how to resolve conflict. So that technique, the feel technique, is phenomenal for horizontal and upward feedback. That's my favorite one.
It's great.
Hey, how do you feel? Or I'm not, you know, I didn't feel great about that interaction, right? That we just had. Or, hey, you know, yesterday we had that meeting. I didn't feel great about the way that ended. How did that make you feel?
It's also closure. You know, it's like you want to reflect and share with them your perspective, but you also, those are the ones you just think about. Like those are the staring at the ceiling at night or thinking about it on your drive to work. And it's like, if you let it linger and then the conversation is no longer fresh, you forget and you brush it under the rug.
You know, I never thought about it that way, that it's closure, but you're totally right as you're saying it. I'm like, oh yeah, of course it is. But I never thought about it that way. And that's what's amazing about it. When you get into and you give somebody else permission to express what they feel, like you get all these different things from different people's perspectives. And that's the hardest part.
Oh yeah.
Especially for me. Like I'm not intuitively good at it. I don't walk down the street and look at you and say, you know, something's going on with that person. And there are people who do. I that's just not my natural state. I'm just, we have a goal. Let's go accomplish it. And I've had to learn these techniques, you know, kind of like blocking and tackling in football, or, you know, they're the fundamentals that underpin a discipline for me. And for other people, they're very intuitive.
So you talked about the how you feel question coming from your peers. What about that giving feedback to your superiors? What was the other tactic that you were?
So the other one is a story about, and I don't know if it's, you would think of it as a superior or not. Maybe this is a peer. And so I'll think of one with a superior, but it's with my co-founder right now. And her name is Melissa. And if she were sitting here, we now laugh about it. Mm-hmm. And we talk about it. And it's what helped build trust with us. And it happened twice. The first time is how we met. We were doing some economic development for the city of Buffalo. And we were sitting next to each other and we were evaluating all these businesses. And, you know, we were writing notes and you're kind of kibitzing in between companies and talking about, you know, what could be done to help. And she kind of looked at me at one minute. Now, remember, look at me. I'm about as privileged a white dude from Silicon Valley as there could be on a
poster. Hoodie and all.
Like I got the whole thing on today. And she's a very proud gay woman of color. And she's sitting next to me and she looks and she says, you got to get out of your white boy Silicon Valley bubble. These companies in this geography don't have access to the things that you're talking about.
Wow. So and, you were just basically talking above all of them without realizing it.
Yeah, I wasn't communicating it to them. They were kind of in my notes and we were just talking amongst ourselves.
Ah, okay.
And so she just looked at me and she said that. And at first I was like I'd spent 4 hours with this woman. Like I didn't really know her. And I went like this.
You're stunned.
I was stunned. And then I bust out laughing. I was like, because we're in my hometown. It's not her town. It's my hometown. Like I'm there to help people. Right. Like we're I care about this place and that's why I'm there. And she's there because she's an expert in her field and they asked her to do it and she's wonderful. And I just burst out laughing. And I was like, you know what? You're right. That led to me asking her if she would be my co-founder for the work that I do today, helping underserved communities of small businesses grow.
Amazing.
Right? So that's how we meet. She had the courage, and that's the word that I'm going to, when you have very senior or upward, it starts with a moment of courage. And you yourself have to recognize that you're taking a step and it's going to take some courage because it can backfire on you. And you have to decide if that's worth it. And so she made that decision in that moment. Now, fast forward, we're executing 2 years in, and we're having a little bit of a problem about style-wise about how we do things. I value, COVID is set in, we're doing all these Zooms, and I really value the face-to-face meeting thing. So I'm doing all these Zooms and I'm bringing management teams and different groups together and we're doing all these reviews in these teams. And she values doing the work. And she values that time in the meeting takes away from her time in doing the work. So she wants to get it. Her view of a meeting is if it's more than 15 minutes, you're doing it wrong. My view of it is you need to spend 15 minutes so that all of the people can get comfortable, settle in before you can get to the truth. But we had never had that conversation. And so this is showing up as conflict and we're trying to do different things in the meeting and we look really out of sync. And so we had an opportunity to have some space. And I said to her, hey, of late, I haven't been feeling great about our interactions in meetings. I'm wondering how that's making you feel. Okay, so I used my technique. And I had to put the branch out there with some courage. And what I got back was, oh my God, I felt the same way. And I've been meaning to talk to you about it. I just haven't known how to bring it up. It's really unusual that they aren't feeling something along the vibe that you are. And so giving somebody else the space again to do it, whether it's up or sideways, I don't think is that difference. I think the difference when it's up is you have to make a calculated decision that you're going to take a courageous act to open that.
What was the hardest thing you had to learn as an emerging leader? If you can put yourself back to the early 20s, mid 20s to early 30s version of you.
What's the hardest thing? That's a tough question.
Was it your Sheryl Sandberg moment?
No. I think it happened before that. I've had so many. I mean, I'm so flawed that like they happen all the time.
That's not true.
No, but there's some truth in that. Like nobody's perfect, and I'm pretty far out on that spectrum of not perfect. So I would say it's two things. And I will say having kids was a big moment for me where you do have to recognize that you have to change your worldview. And you have to learn to be more patient and open and, you know, and as my kids have gotten older, like there are these human beings. I have no idea where some of the things that they do love, care about, like all that comes from. Like nature is an amazing thing. Yeah. And you just have to have a much more open mind about it. So I will say that helped me become a better manager. I think the other thing happened when I went from kind of one of the first startup I really had success with to a big company in kind of an acquisition scenario. And, you know, it's a massive company with, you know, tens of thousands of employees. And I realized that just being a smart person in the room or being right wasn't enough. And that sucked. That actually threw me for a loop. I hadn't had kids yet. I think I would do better with that today, but I didn't have kids at that point. And that really threw me off because it shattered my worldview of meritocracy.
Did someone tell you that?
Yeah.
Or did you observe it?
Yeah. And I'd even be willing to share her name and she'd laugh about it, but I'll share her first name. Her name is Joanne. We are very good friends to this day. I have a tremendous amount of respect for her. And if she picked up the phone and asked me for a favor, I would do it in a minute. She said, we came out of a meeting and she said, you got a minute? She's like, can I walk you to wherever you're going next? And I was like, sure. And she said, I think you might know the most about what we're doing in this room. And you might actually be the smartest person in that room. And we need to do kind of where you're trying to take us. But if you keep walking in the room and pulling your guns out in minute one, nobody's going to hear what you're saying. All they're going to do is see the bullets flying around and want to duck. And at first I was like, what the hell does that mean? And then I kind of internalized it a little bit. And, you know, she was basically telling me I was coming in a little hot because I could see the answer pretty clearly. And I was getting frustrated that this group of seemingly smart people couldn't get there. And her basic point was that I might just know more about it than everybody else. And the fact that they don't know that isn't their fault. It's my responsibility to get them there. And I had a lot more success after that. But that one wasn't like, I walked away, I internalized it, and then the next day I was better in that meeting. That one took like, I'm still working on that.
Well, they're real root issues that people have the leaders have the courage to say. And as you were talking, all I'm thinking is like, what a gift hard feedback is.
It is. So I teach this course from time to time about this topic, and it's I call it how to make the best meetings and run a great team. And one of the things that I do is I say, okay, everybody close your eyes. So Allison, I'll make you close your eyes here for a minute.
Okay.
I want you to think of the best boss you ever had. Just give me a first name.
Bryn.
Okay. Just give me a couple of words that describe Bryn.
Tough, direct, kind.
Okay. Now, keeping your eyes closed, think about the worst boss you ever had. Ooh.
Good one. Am I supposed to say their name?
Whatever you feel comfortable with. All I'm asking for is a first
name. I don't know if I can. Okay.
Okay. Give me a couple words to describe.
Disconnected. Unrealistic. Indirect.
Okay. So I want you to notice two things. You can open your eyes now. I want you to notice two things. How did your body physically feel? And how does it feel when I say
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's triggering, right?
It triggers me becoming a negative person, and I'm not one.
Right. Now, when I say Bryn, what happens?
Just like joy. He's now my business partner, was my boss, now my business.
There you go.
Partner. Yeah.
There you go. So.
Yeah.
We have actual physical cues that our body gives us. And so if you can learn your own physical cues, right? So you're halfway there. Right?
So interesting. Yeah.
Now, the second thing I want you to notice is the words you used about Bryn. If you, the first two, before you got to kind, you mentioned tough.
Direct.
Okay.
Yep.
Was tough?
No. No.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he was, but it came out wrong.
Right. Okay. So this is what I mean. This is the exact point. Bryn was tough, but you respected it. And you respected it because of the word at the end. And every time I do this with somebody, this happens. There is some set of words that they use that could be positive or negative. And then everybody always finishes with, they were respectful, they were kind, they cared, some version of that. And it's that modifier word that makes all the words in front of it positive and not negative. And so it's those words that matter as you think about what who you want to be as a leader, not the other ones. You can be direct, you can be tough, you can be strong, you can put any word there so long as you are kind, caring, whatever. And those words modify our body posture and the physical reaction that we have. And that's how you know it's working.
Talk about an aha moment. So good. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us today on the podcast.
Oh, I don't know. It's just lots of mistakes.
It's sure to trigger someone else's moment.
I hope so.
Thank you.